You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Empty of a getaway car. The only thing between them and an angry, raging mob were police with shields. The Prime Minister, cradled by an officer, lost a shoe, stumbled slightly in the mayhem, a moment of terror captured here on Julia Gillard's face. Tony Abbott was pushed to the waiting car. When she got to the vehicle, you can see Julia Gillard shoved inside. And in a sign of the danger, the rear side of Mr. Abbott bustled in beside her. It was then the violence broke out as police tried to keep the protesters from the car and the car
Angry
tried
Indian
to
Radio.
Out.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
The 2 liters.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land!
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Why do you think it's racist?
Well, it's racist because you hate the president because he's black, and you think that white race is superior. So that's racism, okay? That's the definition of the word. Now, as far as the black sellouts who wish they were white, who are part of the Tea Party,
yes, sir.
These sellout Negroes have no business speaking for and joining with racists who want to kick them back into slavery. Why would you do that? Go back to Africa. America was better 400 years ago.
You've heard that here?
Of course. Michelle Bachmann, everywhere, the plans, the slavery press.
Is that what Michelle Bachmann said?
Absolutely. She talked about us being better off when we were slaves. The racism that is in the Tea Party,
yes, sir.
It's not sophisticated. They don't care about small government. They don't care about none of that nonsense they're talking about.
What do they care
about? They care about white supremacy, racism, and hating black people, and they're scared.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginals.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, the Angry Indian. editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the fourth world from ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And you have tuned in to Indigenous News Thought and Analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neo-classist, neo-colonialist, neo-liberal, and neo-fascist control. I wish you all welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, shout out to the gods and earth, send peace to the original family at this time of strife and struggle. Welcome along. Hey, you know, there's just so much here that, you know, I really don't know where to begin, but there's a couple of things that, you know, I mean, I really wish that this kind of was scripted because it would make it easier for me. It would make it easier for me, because if not, then I'm liable to discuss anything, and, you know, we're just going to go with this. We're in an actual studio today. We're in Red Man Studios in Yakima, Washington State. It's on the easternmost part of the state. Lots of Indians, lots of migrant workers. What's left, actually, because there's so much fear up here with immigration that there's very few Americans here at all anymore. I mean, you know, they're leaving. They're not here anymore. There's been an exodus, you know, a willing exodus of our native brothers from the south of the Rio Grande. And, you know, no one's really discussing this. And when you listen to these Republicans and they're talking about the Mexican onslaught, what Mexican onslaught? I mean, yeah, there's a lot of Mexicans here, but I mean, there's a lot of the migrant people who a lot of these immigrant Mexicans really don't even want to identify with that have left. They've left willingly because they came up here to make money, because they're prevented from making money back home because of El Norte. But see, we're not going to discuss that. We're not going to discuss how NAFTA and GATT completely demolished the Mexican economy. We're not going to talk about their union leaders who have been disappeared, who have been found in ditches. No, we're not going to discuss that in the American media. We're not going to discuss about how completely controlled and dominated Mexican politics on behalf of multinational corporations, many of which were based in the United States, or let me say, are based in the United States. Even if they're like Blackwater and well, what are they calling themselves now? Z? No, they're not even calling themselves Z now either, right? What are they called? It's a third name. Okay, we're here. Oh, by the way, Antonio Alvarez is our engineer tonight. He says that he doesn't know either, but he knows there's a third name. Something with an A, yeah. I've seen it, I don't remember. Well, whatever it is. He doesn't live here anymore, Eric Prince, the inheritor of Boathouse Farms. A product that I actually stopped buying once I realized that the Prince family had anything to do with it. I know they're in Walmart. They're in a couple of natural food stores, and it really trips me about what goes on with the right. No, the why don't we just call them what they are? The fascists. You know, some of them call themselves libertarians. Some of them call themselves conservatives. Some of them call themselves Republicans. I know Gingrich, who's a fascist. You know, he calls himself a Republican, and Ron Paul will call himself a Republican if it will get him elected. Romney, I don't know what the hell Romney is. All I know is that he's Mormon, that he's a Mormon priest. Is that it that he is? I mean, I've been to Salt Lake, but I was just there for a little while. I was just passing through. They're all priests in that religion, aren't they? And have you read the news that he had his atheist father-in-law made Mormon after he passed? I mean, do you know that they do that? That the Mormon Church, as an institution, religions are institutions, but as an institution, the Mormon Church in the United States is a very American thing, isn't it? And when I say American, I mean in terms of Euro-American, because it really has nothing to do with what America's really about. But, you know, white folks in the United States who, you know, decide what will be for everybody and then decide that their religion will speak for everybody. You know, the same reason that they believe that the Cherokee or Aniwawiya, you know, whatever name you want to use, Chaligi, you know, whatever name you want to use, because nobody uses our name, right? But, you know, whatever name you want to use. That they're one of the lost 12 tribes of Israel, and this is why they were considered to be one of the 5 civilized tribes. You know, because the idea was, well, they don't look like the other Indians. The other Indians are ugly, and supposedly the Cherokee and the Choctaw were kind of white-like, quote-unquote. So, you know, they were accepted, and because they were different, and because we had a written language, not when Sequoia came around, before that. You know, I know everybody wants to talk about how Sequoia is the father of the written language of the Cherokee, but, you know, there is substantial archaeological evidence that, you know, the Aniwawiya, Chaligi, which is what I prefer, you know, people were writing way before the European ever got here. And what the hell do you call Mayan and Azteca script? Are you kidding me? You know, we were doing these things. We had mathematics. We had all of this before the white man got here. We had democracy before he got here. Look at the Iroquois. 6 Nations Confederacy. According to the European that got here, Benjamin Franklin. Not me, Benjamin Franklin, when he wasn't in the whorehouse and when he wasn't drunk and when he wasn't smoking weed, he said that here it is, these savages, quote unquote, these savages, that these savages were able for 6,000 years to maintain peaceful relations, to maintain equitable commerce, to maintain what we would now call democracy, what everyone likes to give to the Greeks. Who are not white, who are not European, you know. In their own legend, supposedly, they come from Lebanon. Where is Lebanon? Who lives in Lebanon? Who has always pretty much lived in Lebanon? Who is the true Arab? Where is Yemen? Yeah. Yeah, so you kind of see what I mean. It's the same argument when we get into with Carthage, you know, when we discuss history. You know, when we move past Cicero, and we really look at, when we really look at history, and we get away from the aristocratic, upper crust, learned men, right? You know, basically the slumlords and the capitalists and the landed gentry who sit and write history for other people who are slumlords, major capitalists, the elite, the knighted, the landed gentry. You know, when we move away from that and we start to get into what Bertolt Brecht called The Worker Reads History, one of my favorite poems. And if you're not into Bertolt Brecht, you should be. You know, especially if you're into theater, you really need to understand Brecht. And what was going on in Germany, in Europe at that time, and especially with the split between East and West, and why there was a split between East and West. You know, I mean, how did that come around? And then how did that again become unified? And then after it became unified, what happened? I'm not even talking about the Euro right now. I'm talking about what happened to Yugoslavia. You know, a story that is not discussed at all. What the Kohl government had to do with the breakup of Yugoslavia. No, you know, we're not going to discuss that, right? You know, there's just so many tangents that I can go on, that I'm going to try not to go on, you know. And it's funny because somebody was speaking to me a couple of days ago and basically accused me of, and I say it that way because this is the way the person meant it. They're from California, and they remember Mae Brussel being on the radio back then. Mae Brussel, I mean, what, you had Mae Brussel, Dave Emery, who's still around. Mae Brussel has passed on. Dave Emery is still around. I guess he's still around. I think he's still around. And William Cooper, if you really remember him, Behold the Pale Horse. I know. Conspiracy theory, Bill Cooper, conspiracy theory, right? Well, what have you. It's entirely possible. I mean, you know, he had the actual credentials as far as his military background and so on. they keep talking, you know, it's always brought up his security clearances and what have you, which, you know, in 2012 doesn't mean anything, because, I mean, goddamn, man, I mean, you have thousands of people who have security clearances now. You know, it kind of seems like everybody wants to live, and I know I'm totally going off the topic, but it's going through my mind. You know, it's like we're living through a huge goddamn episode of 24. You know, here it is, you had all of this mayhem started under the Bush and Cheney criminal conspiracy about Iraq. Well, first Afghanistan, and then about Iraq, right? In terms of, well, the justifications for all of this invasion and occupation and bullying and robbing from the people of the United States to pay for these private companies to make a profit over what the hell went down. Because that's what it is. You know, everything that's going on in policy really has nothing to do with Barack Obama or anybody else that has been elected. I'm very serious about that. But you have to understand exactly what it is that I'm saying. The government is bought and paid for. The United States government is bought and paid for. I mean, how much money do you need to run now? And with these political action committees, you know, these super PACs or whatever, you know, it really kills me. You know, Main Street, super PAC, you know, all of these, these like little talking points and code words that they use to get over the fact that the rich, I mean, what is it, this Sheldon Adelson, who I understand is being investigated for some kind of malfeasance, some alleged malfeasance, because I don't really know. You know, does anybody really know? You know, here it is, he gives $5 million U.S. to Newt Gingrich, who says that the Palestinians are an inventive people. Now, this is a pseudo historian who is a white American, which you can't be any more made up than that. You know, and here he is saying that the Palestinians, the indigenous Palestinians to that area, who have generations and generations of blood connected to that soil in Palestine, are an invented quote-unquote people. So Sheldon Adelson gives him $5 million, big ones, and then his wife turns around and gives another $5 million, big ones. So you're looking at $10 million, and you know, everyone knows that Sheldon Adelson is a supporter of Israel, a steadfast, hardcore supporter of Israel, which means that he is a Zionist. I don't believe I'm misusing that term. He is a supporter of the, you know, I'm going to say it the way that they say it, the Jewish state. I'm not putting words in anyone's mouth. This is the way they define that country. It's supposed to be the only democracy in the Middle East, which is another misnomer when you talk about the Middle East, when it looks like Western Asia to me. You know, if you really want to get down to it, you know, really want to get down to brass tacks. But, you know, here we are, right? So what we have looked at is Newt Gingrich, who we all know was a goddamn failure, morally, you know, I mean, I only say that because he brings up the moral argument. He is a moral failure. And he was disgraced. He disgraced the entire goddamn Republican Party, you know, with his ethics violations, and how much was he fined? I mean, I've heard all kinds of things about this man. You know, he's had three wives, and he's talking about nonsense. He was a left-wing political activist when he was in school, and then when he realized he couldn't get paid that way, he did the same thing that the founder of Front Page did. You know, he went from being a communist, the same thing that the late polemicist, Christopher Hitchens, you know, the supposed new left, right? You know, all of these cats, you know, what is his name? I'm forgetting his name. Front Page. You know, I really wish you guys had a mic in there. Look, whoever it is that came up with Front Page, you know who I'm talking about. The screamer. He hangs out a lot with Michelle Malkin. David Horowitz. Thank you. Thank you. She knows, but you don't, right? Okay, well, we see who reads the newspapers. Okay, David Horowitz. You know, the last time I paid him any attention, he got into a, if you want to call it a debate, with Walt Churchill, which really wasn't a debate. And I'm actually surprised that Churchill went along with it, but, what I really remember about that was not even the supposed debate, because Horowitz could not handle Churchill. I mean, that's the bottom line. Horowitz could not handle Churchill. So, you know, that was a non-event. What was the real event was Sean Hannity trying to take on Churchill, which was a mistake. You know, it was the same thing when I watched Sean Hannity try to take on Hitchens over the editorial he wrote about Jerry Falwell. When he finally left this mortal coil after blaming 911, which, you know, you can think what you want, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, and Republican listeners. You know, I don't believe the official story because I know the official story. And Christopher Hitchens basically said that the passing of Falwell was a deliverance. This is a quote, right? He said that it was a deliverance. And Sean Hannity, you know, got into all of this, you know, you're being mean and you're hateful, and you know how he twists his mouth when he's trying to make a point. You know, all of that. And then you had Alan Combs, and I swear, I've said this before on this show, the same thing I've said about Juan Williams. I don't know what the hell Alan Combs is about. I really don't. And I really don't care. And you know, when they did this, they had we're getting ready to take a commercial break here. But I can't remember his name. Ralph Reed. They had that howdy doody Ralph Reed up there, who I mean, there's so many people I know who have so many things to say about him, and I'm not going to get into it because I've never heard any allegations about him. You know, I'm just saying, I look at him and I hear what he was saying, and I remember when Alan Combs was just, you know, pitching him softballs, I mean, it seemed to me that Hitchens had a couple before he actually came on. Yeah, I mean, he looked drunk before they even started. I mean, he really did. But you know, Hitchens was Hitchens, and he was able to handle it whether he was sober or not, whether he had a cigarette or not. And he basically told them that, you know, Hitchens told them on Fox, and basically told Sean Hannity, as you know, on camera, that Falwell was a maniac, and that basically he was guilty of treason for what he said. But you know, this is what he said. This is what the Hitch said. And Hannity couldn't deal with it. Hannity couldn't handle Walt Churchill. Hannity hasn't been able to handle questions about his relationship with Ted Turner. You know, he can't handle anybody who actually knows what the facts are. And if you really want to laugh, when he was in Huntsville, wait, hold up a second, hold up before we go to break. Hold up. When he was in Huntsville, Alabama, look, I'm not good on concision. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, bro. You know, hey, look. He, you can find this if you're really looking for it. He was, when he was still in Huntsville, Alabama, I don't remember what station he was working for back then, but this is, you know, back in the day when Khalid Abdul-Muhammad was still alive, when he was still with the Nation of Islam, by the way, and he made the mistake of trying to, you know, have Khalid Abdul-Muhammad on his show, who was sharp, whether you agree with him or not. You know what I'm saying? Who was sharp and who was not intimidated by any Caucasian, especially somebody who was a right winger, you know. And he tried to do the usual, you know, you're hateful, black people are hateful, and you know, you have no reason to complain, we've given you everything. And he couldn't handle him. He basically had Hannity flubbing, tripping over his words. Somebody called in from the Klan, and Hannity, you know, tried to pretend that he was offended, and then, you know, some other people, some local people who identified themselves as white, basically started saying, you know, I didn't realize how bigoted you were until I heard this conversation. So, you know, when it really comes down to it, when you look at Fox, when you look at O'Reilly, he can shout down the son of a victim of 911. but he couldn't handle Phil Donahue, could he? He couldn't handle Phil Donahue, could he? He can't handle anybody that can give him a fair argument. So, you know, I'm just saying, and I'm sorry, but I had to get that out. I had to get that out. Look, this is the Angry Indian, and we're transmitting from Occupied North America, in particular Yakima, right now from Red Man Studios. This is Fourth World Radio, and you're listening to, you know, news for intelligent Aboriginals. Stick around.
Låt oss då mäta det. Låt oss sköta det. Kan krig så ut. En kolsen det ska som hålla.
Our land is not for sale or to give to anybody.
Alla dag samma kolla det här. Skälla sig och sköta som sköta och insötten. Det är samma nästan ganska gott.
When the Creator gave us this land to live on, there was no white man on this island, for he was across the ocean. That's where his papers are. Not here in this land. For his laws are written down in paper. For he never said that the paper will be your law. Never, as long as we live.
Hello, this is Maurice Muhammad, Minister of Reformation with Black Unity, and you can always find us at www.blackunity.name.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginals.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell them to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice. End HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination. Get information from your community health center or nursing station, or visit www.caan.ca.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
Hey, music lovers. This is Finian McKay, and you're listening to a Creative Commons licensed podcast. Rock and roll forever.
This is Pete Seeger. What country comes to mind when you hear this? The government illegally spies on civilians, produces phony news reports. People are imprisoned without charge or access to a lawyer. Prisoners are tortured and killed, and an illegal war launched on the basis of lies in which illegal weapons are used against civilians, against journalists and hospitals. Unfortunately, the United States government is behind these actions.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
Hey, what do you think about this idea? Since we freed the slaves in 1865, don't you think the black race owes the white race reparations? I was thinking like $20,000, you know, per person. I mean, anybody that's on welfare.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Because I gotta get to stop and frisk here, because it really is part of this criminalization of a generation.
Well, let's get into it. Let's jump into it.
Stop and frisk is a policy of the NYPD under which the police are empowered to stop anyone, demand that they produce ID, and that they turn out the contents of their pocket for any reason or for no reason at all. And they document this, and when you look at the reasons they write down, it comes down to for no reason at all, because they stop people because the people stared the cop right straight in his eye, but they also stop people because they refuse to look directly at the cop. They stop people for what they call furtive movements, just any reason, and sometimes they just don't put down any reason at all. Last year, they stopped over 600,000 people under this policy. This year, they're on pace to stop more than 700,000.
Is there any breakdown in terms of the nationality of
these people? Yes, I was about to give you that.
Okay.
The nationality breakdown comes down to 5 out of 6 of the people subjected to stop and frisk are either black or Latino, and more than 90% of them, the cops find no reason to either arrest them or even write them a ticket, a desk appearance ticket or something like that for any violation. So 90% of them were doing nothing wrong when the cops stepped to them. And of the 10%, less than 10% who do get arrested or tickets written, many of them were doing nothing wrong either, because this is where all the marijuana arrests come in, for the small amounts of marijuana that you had in your pocket that you took out and then it became illegal. So those people were actually doing nothing wrong either before the cops stepped to them. This is what stop and frisk is, and Ray Kelly, the police chief in New York, who has presided over this policy from its inception about 7 years ago, has told black elected officials that he wants every black or Latino kid to feel like when he leaves his house, he's subject to being stopped and frisked by the NYPD. I mean, he literally told 3 black elected officials this. In other words, I want all of them to know that we're going to treat them like criminals until they prove to us that they're innocent. That's what they should be thinking about when they step out of the house.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Okay, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I'm your host, the Angry Indian, editor of the Aboriginal Press News Service and editor general of the Aboriginal News Group. And you can learn more about us at ang-newswire.blogspot.com. You can also check us out at aboriginalpressnews.tumblr.com. That is our new home, if you want to call it, our virtual office for the Aboriginal News Group. And if you are a Native American blogger, journalist, podcaster, what have you, if you're out there getting news to the Fourth World, to the people of the Fourth World, you need to let us know. So, this is the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, broadcasting to the international Aboriginal community from radioforall.net. And we are also blogging this podcast from our Fever and our RSS feed, Fourth World Radio. And we are carried by a never-widening network of independent information providers, not financially hamstrung by the corporatist news model. So, for more information on the news items and the opinions discussed in this internet radio broadcast, please visit the world's best electronic newspaper, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. You can also leave us a polite voicemail at Aboriginal Media Group via Google Talk. And you can always email our studios at aboriginalmediagroup@gmail.com. So, I welcome back my brothers and sisters of the Fourth World, our non-Aboriginal ideological comrades, and the negative elements staunchly opposed to human justice and social harmony. But in spite of that, take the time to listen to this show on the sly anyway. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. And, there's so much. I mean, the propaganda out here is, I don't know. How do you want to put it? How do you want to articulate it? It's crazy no matter how you look at it. I mean, it is completely insane. You know, the amount of hypocrisy that goes on, across the entire political spectrum, but right now I'm speaking in particular about the Republican Party in the United States. You know, there is absolutely no comparison to the Tories. No comparison to even, you know, and, you know, some of you might take this as an insult, but I'm going to say it anyway, to the, you know, the upper crust of the Australian establishment. You know, I mean, everybody in Oz is, you know, the descendant of someone who was sent to a penal colony. But, you know, it doesn't really matter, because if you've been there a little longer than so many others and you were able to get it at stakes, and you were able to have enough black fellas work for you for free to the point where you could tend all of your plantations or your sheep or what have you, there's nothing wrong with the chaotic, you know, there's nothing wrong with the politically chaotic. That, you know, you can accept that, because as long as things are chaotic, you know, as Nietzsche, you know, used to put. Now he wasn't a Nazi supporter, but, you know, Hitler and the brown shirts and all of the intellectual freaks like Goebbels and Goering, and I guess you could say Himmler, but Himmler was more dealing with the occult. You know, Himmler and Hess were not living in reality. You know, that they were astrologers and they believed in magic and what have you. And, you know, it's a trip. And, you know, when you really, you know, take into account, especially when you get to these pseudo historians like Gingrich and Santorum, who are both Catholic, and, you know, they want to pull up Kennedy. It's insane. You know, I mean, have you heard, especially for those of you who are from Mexico, have you heard that Romney is not claiming to be Mexicano? He's not claiming to be Mexican, but he's claiming to be Mexicano because, from what I understand, his family, you know, they're Mormon, so, you know, they have the multiple wife thing, and he didn't want to let go of his stable, so he went to Mexico. And the grandfather and Romney's father was born there, and I guess at some point he came back to the States. So now he's claiming to be an immigrant too, and this is only because Jim Rich hit him with the anti-immigration charge, which is, you know, hypocrisy, because Jim Rich is anti-immigrant and he's anti-African and he's anti-free speech and he's anti-peace and he's pro-war and he's pro-genocide and he's pro-white supremacist. I mean, Jim Rich is exactly what he sounds like. He's a fascist. He is a fascist. That is exactly what he is. I mean, it is what it is. You know, I mean, listen to what the man has to say for himself. He's a complete hypocrite. First, he says that the Palestinian people, who are a people, okay, don't exist. But yet, he met with Yasser Arafat. There's a photograph of this. They're smiling. But he says, no, they don't exist. This is Jim Rich. This is new Jim Rich. This is who the people were cheering as he basically penis slapped Juan Williams in the face on international media, who liked that photograph of Jan Brewer pointing her finger in the face of the United States President, Barack Obama, disrespecting this man on the tarmac. Look, I have my issues with Barack Obama. A lot of us have our issues with Barack Obama. As an African person and as a native, I have more to say about Barack Obama than the average person in the United States, and I stand on that. Because every Jew in this country, regardless of their nationality and their particular ethnicity outside of being Jewish, expects every Jewish politician in the United States to kowtow to their particular political ideologies. And maybe that's not fair to say ideologies, but their particular political communal wants. And if you think I'm joking, look at how all of these politicians, except for Ron Paul, and we know why Ron Paul doesn't do it. It has nothing to do with, what do we want to say, legitimate politics? You know, is that what we want to call it, legitimate politics? You know, mainstream politics is probably the more accurate term. But let's be honest, emotionally, And we're fools to not look at how people look, you know, judge these things emotionally, because they're not using any common sense. If they were using any common sense, we wouldn't be where we are. Someone like Jim Rich, who was continuously blaming what he calls the liberal media when there is no such thing. You know, this is what I'm talking about. While they're talking about the liberal media is preventing Jim Rich from going any further than where he is, and not the fact that he's a moral hypocrite, not the fact that he was a disgrace when he led his supposed Republican revolution, not the fact that he's a liar. You know, he claims to, when he was yelling at John King the other night, doing one of these dumbass debates, when he was, you know, saying to him that MSNBC or whoever the hell it was, one of these corporate mouthpieces, didn't want to get the real story on his former marriage, which we all know that he's a lowlife, that he waited till his wife was sick and, you know, not together there and about to leave the planet to demand that she sign, not even grant him a divorce, but that she actually, in what could have been her deathbed, sign the divorce papers. You know, the same kind of story that we hear about with Torquemada Alberto Gonzalez when he was touring with this country during the Bush and Cheney administration, on how they went to John Ashcroft, who is no liberal. John Ashcroft is no liberal. I mean, don't you remember his song, The Eagles Are Flying? He's no liberal. This is somebody who had the statues covered up on Capitol Hill because he found them to be offensive. They've been there for how long? You know? I mean, you have to be kidding me. You have to be kidding me. you know, he was trying to force him to backdate and sign on to, you know, one of Bush's signing statements. You know, this is the mentality of the Republican Party. This is who the conservatives are. It has already been scientifically proven. How many different studies do we have to see over the decades that conservatives, Tories, Republicans, religious, hardliners, what have you, regardless of ethnicity, and this stupid Eurocentric concept of race, regardless of that, are the true dangers to the planet. When are we going to admit this? The science shows this, but then we also have to understand that conservatives reject science. And then when you really think about it, it makes sense why. Because it's so goddamn clear. It's so goddamn clear. Not anecdotal mishigas. I'm talking about scientifically proven, mandated, black letter reports that one can read or in the 21st century download and review at one's leisure. Conservatives do not have the same brain structure as the rest of us, as normal people, who realize that the world does not revolve around us, that we have to share things, that we actually gain more by sharing of our resources, of ourselves, and what have you. We realize that, you know, dealing with other people is actually a good thing. Not taking things from them, not abusing them, not exploiting them, not using them as a litmus test to feel better about ourselves. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. Anybody that you find, the shorthand in all of this is that if you're a Republican, if you're a conservative, if you're a Tory, whatever the hell, if you believe in your God and nobody else's, you know, and the right, and no one else has the right to have their own, you know, belief system, which is ridiculous anyway, but I'm just saying, you know, by default, you are a liar, you are afraid of your own shadow, you are at your inner core a coward. You do not know how to deal with the world as it is. You're a monkey who wants all of the bananas and you don't want to share with anybody. Conservatives are greedy, selfish, self-absorbed, egotistical little buffoons who walk around belittling other people, demanding the right to belittle other people, demanding a right to hoard things that they don't even that don't even belong to them. The white man's burden. Well, I deserve everything. I deserve your country. I deserve your wife. I deserve everything. All of your gold. Everything that you have. Why? I'm a white man. It's mine. It's mine. But what does that mean? It means that it's mine. You know, and the only difference between Europeans and other groups is Europeans always put things in legal language. You know, in Africa, if they decide to wipe out an entire people or village or what have you, they just do it. They don't make any excuses for it. Chinese emperors, over the centuries, they just decide to, you know, force the people, you know, a particular district or province into slavery or to doing something that they don't really want to do as a community. They just went ahead and did it. You know, I mean, we like to look at Europe as this idea that, well, you know, the individual has rights. The hell with you. You know, those of you who think and pursue that false argument. You know, ask any white goddamn Australian who the hell taught them to be free. Who the hell taught them to think independently. You know, Americans live in denial. But, you know, north and south from Tierra del Fuego all the way up to Nunavut. You know, ask an honest European historian. Why does the European in the Americas, in Mexico, in the United States, in Canada, you know, in Brazil, I'm talking about the white folks, not those of us of color and those of us who are indigenous. I'm talking about the white people, those who define themselves as white. I'm not making, you know, a racial case here. This is what Europeans have done. And then they pretend that they didn't do it. that somehow we were all, you know, in on this plot to make things racial and to separate people by class and what have you. They did this. This is what I'm saying. Conservatives are hypocrites. You know, they turn around and make the argument that no one is equal, that people should not be equal, that there is no such thing as equality, that equality is somehow akin to being a friend of the devil. But then when it comes to Martin Luther King Jr., Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. to be exact, it's like, well, hey, he came here to save us, to remind us that we weren't being particularly nice to black folk. But really, he was here for us to be able to sit at the same table and hold hands, you know. They talk nothing about the racism that he was talking about. They speak nothing of the anti-war, you know, preaching that he did. You know, they don't talk about the injustice that he preached against. They talk about his connection to Gandhi, which was a very weak connection because it was kept from him that Gandhi didn't like black people. We know this now. We also know that Gandhi was an anti-African bigoted son of a bitch. And if you don't like that, hey, write me, aboriginalradio@lavabit.com. If you think I have it wrong, then you show me some evidence that totally refutes the fact that Mahatma Gandhi, when he was living in South Africa, was a white supremacist supporter who led troops against indigenous black people who were fighting for their human and territorial rights against an oppressive, invading, Europocentric presence. If you have information to refute that he was a bigot, and to refute the fact that the racism in India that is expressed in the caste system, that he did not uphold Hindu prescriptions and rules against the untouchables, I would really like to see it. Our new address, contact us. We do listen to you. We do want to hear what you have to say. Aboriginal Radio at lavabit.com. If you can prove otherwise, I would really like to see it. But we have Glenn Beck here, who has completely twisted Dr. King and completely twisted Dr. King's message into something that he was actually fighting for white people. And you have this government led by a black man. Well, actually, I should say led by an African, because he really has nothing to do with the African population in the United States. See, he comes from the slave owner's house, not from the field. His father was from Kenya. There's a big difference. He doesn't identify with us. Yes, I know his wife is Geechee, comes from my tribe, and it really amazes me that he's with a Geechee woman and has no sense of ethnic goddamn, you know, recognition, you know, unity, nothing. He has spoken up for the Jewish community in this country and in Israel. He has spoken up for the gay community in this country. He has spoken positively of and to the Mexican community, even though they are being sodomized right now through this whole immigration nonsense. The third time the Mexicans have been taken advantage of for political gain by conservatives. And in this case, also by what is supposed to be the progressive wing of the political spectrum here, when there is no such thing. If you can look at Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, who the Republicans insult on a regular basis, as well as the current head of state, who they insult on a regular basis, and say that he has some sort of identification with the average black man in the street. No, he doesn't. You know, Oscar Grant is dead, and he has said absolutely nothing about this case and what it has meant to our people. This is what black people talk about over the dinner table. Where is Obama when it comes to defending black people? See, now, wait for him to leave office and then he's going to have a lot to say. Like Jimmy Carter, who didn't have very much to say about Palestinians when he was president, while he was funding the Khmer Rouge. Think about that. How did Pol Pot get his munitions. Look it up. Don't believe me. Look it up. Don't believe me. You know, he fired Andrew Young, King's man, right? One of King's body people. Andrew Young. He's still down there, what, in Atlanta? Yeah, you know, finding out that their photographer, quote-unquote, slash pal, was a informant. That just about everybody around them was a goddamn informant, you know. And do you know that the spot that James Earl Ray was supposed, and I do wish you to capitalize with a huge S and underline supposed, to have done what he did to Dr. King, they've completely changed the entire facade. So if you go back and try to do research, everything is different. Your research now is gone. Look at John Judge on that information, and you'll be hearing him here again over this new season of 2012. And we're gonna take a break. You know, it's really hard for me to stick to consistent. Which is probably why I never really was able to get a regular radio job. But, you know, who knows? It is what it is. This is the Angry Indian. You are listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. And we are recording this morning from Yakima, deep in Indian country, from Red Man Studios. Stick around.
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for Intelligent Aboriginals.
Oh, this is Lee Gaylord again, the crazy old white man from the hood, and I am here to tell you about the injustices. Prison is a warehouse. It's a warehouse where people make money. Prison is a business.
The Injustice System Talk Radio.com.
तपाईलाई थाहा छ नेपालमा पहिलो पटक कहिले एचआईभी संक्रमित व्यक्ति फेला परेको थियो
थाहा छ सन् 1988 मा
यतिका वर्ष बितिसक्दा एचआईभी एड्स को क्षेत्रमा के भए सकारात्मक परिवर्तनहरू कति आए कसले के गरे
के हामीले आफ्नो जिम्मेवारी बहन गर्यौं तपाईले गर्नुभयो
जवाफ आफैसँग खोजौं जिम्मेवारी बहन गरौं
सामाजिक रूपान्तरणका लागि गगन गृहको एउटा प्रयास
Only 28% of Americans believe in evolution.
62% want creation science taught along with evolution in our schools.
44% want creation science taught exclusively.
You are all about to learn that you didn't come from monkeys and slime. All of you were created in the image and likeness of God.
But didn't we evolve from prior organisms?
Yes, we did. Those organisms were named Adam and Eve.
Then why do we share 99% of our DNA with chimpanzees?
The Bible doesn't teach about chimpanzees.
What about redundant DNA and junk DNA? Does the Bible teach about that?
Well, I can tell you one thing. There's no redundant DNA in hell.
Our children are our future.
Let's try not to turn them into dangerous idiots.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
And one of the facts in your estimation is that Negro and white can never live together in America.
Evidently, the white man feels that the Negro can never live with him because it's the white man who is stopping integration. I'm not the one who is stopping Negroes from integrating with whites. I'm not the one who keeps Negroes from integrating white schools. And so don't put the burden of proof on me. It is the white man himself who is guilty, and whose guilt proves that the Negro and the white man can't live side by side. Now, if I'm wrong in saying they can't, just prove that I'm wrong by doing it, or just show me one place where it's done. It can't be done in New York City. It won't be done anywhere in this country.
Nothing British is a campaign against racism and extremism. Add your voice by signing our petition at www.nothingbritish.com.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Now.
This is Radio
News Service.
I'll be talking into your heart, into your head, in just a few moments. All I want you to do. All I want you to do is just lend me your ear for the time that we will be together.
AK, welcome along, welcome along. Welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. This is the Angry Indian, and we're discussing a few different things, you know, as usual. I had a script. If you want to call it that, this show is unscripted, but you know, you have these I have points that I want to bring up that I don't always get to, because I always look at the news before I sit down with I've managed to record the show. And by the time I'm in the chair and by the time the microphone is in my face, I've either reevaluated where I am, where I was, what I was going to talk about, what have you. And this is primarily because of the internet. Now, you know, back in the old days when you had to go to libraries and had to go through old dirty bookstores, you know, there used to be, back in the 70s, and I guess I remember them. Well, I had left before then. But, you know, when I got my political education, it was going through the old, bookstores in downtown in West Philly. Going through these old political manuals and, going to bookstores where people were giving lectures about this, that, what have you. That's how you used to have to do it. You know, I mean, people would photocopy things. Just like when we were talking about the Ron Paul newsletters. I mean, I've actually read them. Because, back in the days, you know, old school, what have you, as the young people like to put it, you know, we didn't have the internet. You know, we didn't have these things. So if somebody couldn't call you and basically recite to you what the information was, they would photocopy these things and send them along. The UFO community used to do that. They would photocopy stories from all over the world of different sightings or what have you, what they thought were sightings. And they would send them to a list. You would pay a couple of bucks and you'd get on the list and you would get these. That's it. They used to call them a clipping service. So that shows my age right there. They used to call those clipping services back in the day. That's how I found out about Mae Brussel. That's how I had initially learned about William Cooper and people like that. And I'm just throwing these names out for the hell of it, because there's others that you probably would never have heard of. I mean, on the Native end, you had the American Indian Movement newsletter, which I had seen a couple of. And then there was another group, the Native American Peace Movement. I forgot where they were. I think they were out of Atlanta, Georgia.
You know, you have things like this. I mean, Democracy Now! Is one... no, I was getting ready to say Juan Williams. No. Juan Gonzalez, who is not in any way, shape, or form Juan Williams. He, and I can't remember the co-author of the book, we would actually like to interview them for this show. We would. And I'm trying not to ramble here. But, you know, the bottom line is that they just wrote a book about media in the United States and what the media used to be like. There used to be, because I remember this, you know, there used to be a hell of a lot of Spanish language papers, Greek, Italian, in just about any neighborhood. Every newsstand that I remember as a youngster had, various papers. The Jewish press and so on, Hebrew and English. The information was out there. People were much more informed. I'm being very serious about this. And again, you know, I'm dating myself, but in the 70s, maybe up to the mid 80s, you know, before Reagan, you would have a disagreement with someone, you know, but you'd have your Joe Sixpack type folks who, you know, especially blue collar people, you know, they go through life, they pay their taxes, you know, they're worried about paying off their mortgage, and you know, so they can have the mortgage party, you know, it's done, it's paid for, what have you, and then you know, retire and consider whether or not they want to go to Florida. That was the average mainstream American thing, and when I say that, I mean white folks, because African people were still being discriminated against in education, still being discriminated against in employment, still being discriminated against in political fairness and access and accuracy, still being discriminated. Native Americans at this point, well, until 1973, most people in the United States, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of their previous nationality, didn't even know we existed. Alcatraz was considered a stunt. That's the way the news reported it at the time. It was a stunt. You know, I never remember anybody in my particular family who ever referred to the native takeover of Alcatraz in 68. I believe it was 68. You're too young to remember. 68. I never remember anybody in my family, and I come from a conservative Democratic family, Catholic, ever said, you know, that was a minor thing, that it was just a little rabble just trying to make some, you know, some noise to get attention. No. You know, even the most conservative native, for once, stood up tall during that takeover, because we let the world know that we were here. You know, and then in 1973, and during the BIA takeover, which I don't remember what year that was, and I should remember, but because I remember reading in the papers about all of this. What was it? Okay, Wounded Knee was 73. This is 72. Got it. 1972. The Trail of Broken Treaties. The caravan, you know, went to D.C. And, you know, one thing led to another, right? And, you know, I... Well, you know, this was one of the things I was kind of going to talk about, and then I kind of said that I wouldn't talk about it. But you know what? Since we're on it, since we're going to talk about 72 and 73 and 68, when Native people stood up for themselves, let's talk about it. Now... The United States has its usual State of the Union address, which, you know, as an Indian, as an African, I mean, what am I going to say? It is what it is, right? You know, they always talk about us in terms of we're included, right? Okay. So, you know. They had the State of the Union address here.
and you know, they do this traditionally too in the United States. You know, after the president, the Great White Father. Even though I know, you know, you're thinking that this doesn't apply to who's in office now, but yeah, it does. The Great White Father. That you know, after he says what he says, you know, the Republicans go and have a cup of coffee and then get in front of the cameras so that they can basically twist whatever the hell was said previously, you know, for us dummies. You know, because my stepfather used to talk about that. You know, he's like, I just heard what the man said, because there hasn't been a woman yet, right? He's like, you know, I just heard what the man said. Why do I need seven, you know, white folks to now sit here and tell me and explain to me like I'm an idiot what the hell was just said? So, you know, you have the whoever's in office to say what they say. Then you have what's supposed to be the opposition, which really isn't, you know, except in terms of, you know, club boy partisanship. And they make their rebuttal. So there's a Democrat in right now. So the Republicans had their petty two-pit thing to say. And for, you know, those of you who don't know anything about natives, which is a lot of you, right? You have what is called the Native State of the Union. You know, of course it has to follow our occupiers. Now, I'm going to let that trickle down for a minute. Or half a minute, however long you need. Think about that. After the people who are occupying us make their State of the Union address for the colonialist, you know, thing, then one of our representatives, who generally is not chosen by us, he's chosen by the elite in our community, not by us, by those who have money, have influence, have the influence to have money, and are actually getting 2 or 3 cents more than the rest of us out of whatever the hell is being handed out to natives. You know, I'll be straight with you, because I really don't have the time to con you. You know, I actually have the transcript of the native response to what Obama had to say, and I don't have it here. At least it's misplaced, it's not in front of me, whatever. You know, I really don't give a damn about what he said, you know, because I read it. Someone was kind enough to actually forward the information to us, and you know, I read it. And it didn't say a damn thing about Leonard Peltier. It didn't say a damn thing about the police brutality that is being exacted against our young people. It didn't say a damn thing about the lands that we have lost. It doesn't say... he didn't say anything. I can't remember his name. I can't remember his name. But, he didn't represent Indian people at all. He represented an elite in Indian country. Those who are willing to take the money and run with it. They got the tribal car, they got the tribal house, they got the tribal contracts that they can hand out to their cousin and their brother-in-law and what have you. And, you know, all of their white relatives that are in-laws will make sure they get their cut. And you know what I'm talking about. In the meantime, real Native people are out here struggling. About to lose their trailers, don't have running water, don't have telephone service. I mean, he had the nerve. That was one of the things that got me, that he had the nerve to talk about how Native people are cut off from the internet. Most Native people don't even have phones, Cat. You know what I mean? Come on, man. Come on, dude. Most Natives, most skins don't even have phones, man. I know Native people that you know, that they don't have water to bathe with, and you're talking about internet service. So what? We can shop online? You know, is that it? You know, he talked about how much
the Obama administration has done for the Indian. I don't see anything. Yeah, I see people like that making money, though. You know, selling Verizon phone service to people who can't even, you know, put food on the table because they don't have any money. But, you know, according to Gingrich, you know, with us lazy maggots. But, you know, in the real cut, the bottom line is we're an Occupy people. So, you know, it's okay when someone like Gingrich comes around and says that the Palestinians are a vendetta people, because the Israelis are doing exactly what the United States has been doing. You know, I mean, officially since 1776. Because that's what made the whole thing legal, right? That's what made the whole thing hunky-dory legitimate. You know, it was because they set themselves up as the power base and said, okay, this is the new rule. And I defy anyone to tell me otherwise. I defy it. Because the evidence is there. But then again, what are we saying? You know, here we have the Tea Party. Not just in Tennessee. Tennessee actually tried to make it legal. But the bottom line is that the Tea Party, just like any other conservative that doesn't want to deal with reality, are willing to change the books. You know, I mean, didn't they do this in one of the Occupy protests where they set fire to books? They set fire to the library that the Occupy movement has set up? Where else did they burn books? You know, I asked the historian Gingrich, or whatever the hell I don't care how you pronounce his name. He's a bigoted, small-minded person. You know, his sister, which he loves to point out as his half-sister, is a lesbian. She's gay. And, you know, he not only doesn't approve, he wants all of his constituents down there in Cobb County, Georgia, to know that he doesn't approve. But he's all about freedom and everything. He is a liar. Matter of fact, let's talk about the hypocrisy. Like I said, I'm totally off script, so let's just go with this anyway. If I can believe what I'm reading out here, is that now we all know that he was a leftist when he was in school. He was totally against Vietnam War. He was totally, and I guess he still is, for free love and what have you. But it turns out that his free love proclivities, supposedly he learned from some Marxists. Like straight up Marxists. You know, like the type of Marxists who influenced the Students for a Democratic Society. SDS, right? Remember them? SDS. And their violent spinoff. You know, the whole Bill Ayers and I can't remember her name anymore. His chick. You know, the whole Bonnie and Clyde thing. You know, total non-connection to Obama. They still talk about this. Total nothing. There's nothing there. It's just smoke, right? In the meantime, here you have more and more evidence that Ron Paul not only signed off in these newsletters that he was talking them up and making a profit from them and defending them when he needed to defend them before he decided to run for president. But that doesn't mean anything. There's no connection to that. You know, Anders Breivik, the Norwegian maniac, the terrorist who went to the United States, went to Ireland or what have you, was all over Europe. He's on Google, which is monitored like what? They watch everything on the social networks. He's getting the materials to do the mayhem that he caused in Norway. Does anybody talk about it? Does anybody care? Does anybody connect him to Pamela Geller or to Spencer or to any of these other maniacs here that are pushing this Islamophobia nonsense? I mean, like I said, this whole Park 15 community center, which they were calling a victory mosque, which wasn't even near where the whole 9-1-1 conspiracy went down. It's open. Nothing's happened. Nobody cares. No big deal. But they screamed about it anyway. I mean, you know, the Americans are stupid. I'm sorry. I mean, it's the same thing that happened with this whole Y2K nonsense. People were freaking out and buying water and buying up batteries and buying up all the survival gear, and the gun stores ran out of stock. And what happened? Nothing. Nothing. What happened when Orson Welles did War of the Worlds? What happened? You know, Americans all over the East Coast Especially where that that thing was supposed to have taken place in the radio program. And if you haven't heard it, it's public domain. If it is still public domain. Have you heard about this too? They're pulling stuff out of the public domain. Now, I kind of noticed this because I frequent public domain sites. Because that's how I do a lot of this show. I mean, everything here is either copyleft, Creative Commons, or public domain. And they're pulling things out of the public domain. So what was the point of having the public domain? You know, why don't you just crush creativity 100%, not allow anybody to build on anything from the past? Why don't you just say, let's forget the past unless you're willing to pay for it? Well, unless you have the ability to pay for it. And that is the whole meme behind this, isn't it? You know, as far as these guys are concerned, be it Gingrich or Romney, who wants to convince you that he's blue-collar when he isn't. And Gingrich, who wants to convince you that he's moral when he isn't. That he's democratic when he isn't. That he cares when he doesn't. And that he isn't an overbloated, vicious piece of jelly. You know, that he is. He's an insulting, racist, misogynist son of a bitch. You know, and he's just one. Santorum is another one. Have you heard the one? I'm totally off script. Have you heard about this one? That he's now accusing. Now, listen to this. He is accusing the Obama administration, and I suppose Barack Obama personally, for trying to get people into school. Which is ridiculous because he isn't. There are black people out here doing things that they really would rather not be doing if they could go to school. If they could get a goddamn job. So that's not true. That's not true. But see, it's just an example of the anti-intellectualism that is so prevalent on the goddamn Republican end of the political spectrum. He is actually accusing the Obama administration of encouraging people of going to college. Why? Because supposedly, according to him, I don't know where he's come out as this Catholic defender. You know, Catholics used to really be hated in this goddamn country, something I can attest to personally. As a Catholic worker, well, somebody, you know, raised Catholic worker, you know, my, if you want to call them, they're not religious, but spiritual beliefs, you know, are more traditional, more African, more with my own ethnic cultural, you know, ism. I'm Gullah, so I follow Gullah beliefs. And Gullah belief has nothing to do with the Bible. That's something that came later. We can talk about that too. But, you know, Gingrich is a converted Catholic. He's a converso. He is. He is a converso in the most classic sense of the term. This is actually his third religion because he was Lutheran at one point, I believe. Wait a minute. Supposedly Southern Baptist, Lutheran, and now Opus Dei. Right? So he and Santorum are now bucking for who can outpope the Pope. And Santorum is saying that the colleges are secular. Well, under the U.S. Constitution, the separation of church and state, they're supposed to be secular. They're supposed to be secular. If you want a religious upbringing, they're Catholic, they're Jesuit, they are even evangelical. Oral Roberts will take care of you. You know, go to their schools. You don't have to go to a secular school. You know, nobody's forcing you because in this capitalist world, you have choice. Right? Because you want to be able to buy the type of education and healthcare that you want and whatever the market will provide. Well, hey, you know, the market says that there are religious schools if you want them. So go to them. Nobody's stopping you. Well, actually, your wallet is stopping you if you can't go. And you know what? Hey, that's not supposed to be the problem of anybody else but you because it's your fault that you didn't have the right type of education and job. It's your fault that you weren't born white. That's just the way it is. And you can't expect the world to stop and for capitalists to go into their pocket to pay for your education. You pay for it yourself. You know, I mean, you hear Gingrich, you know, his whole voucher this and voucher that. What the hell would he know about a voucher? Well, actually, he wouldn't know about vouchers. He has a damn line over at Tiffany's
the jeweler, that's as long as my arm. So, you know, yeah, I guess he would know about vouchers. I suppose he would when you look at it that way. But anyway, what I'm getting back to is Santorum is accusing Barack Obama, because he's a black man and supposedly he's a radical, of trying to force or encourage or child people into, you know, to trick people into going to school, to getting higher education, because that way they can go through the secular system of pedagogical buffoonery that we have in this country and come out non-religious. That supposedly any scientific teaching, you know, any logical and empirical education that goes on in the American school system is anti-God. So, you know, that's the only reason why it's funded. You know, not because it's giving you an education, but because it's turning you against God. This is what he's saying. Now, I haven't heard Genrich talk too much about the religion bit because, well, he can't. Can he? He can't. What is he going to say? He's a serial adulterer. What is he going to say? You know, according to the Ethics Committee, when he was leading the Republican Revolution, he's a liar. So what can he say? He's also rich. So what can he say? Same thing with Santorum. Santorum left whatever his seat was, you know, after the whole trying to sell you the weather and bringing a baby fetus home. And I'm not making fun of him about that. That's what he did. I'm not mocking him at all. That's what he did. That's what he did. And obviously he feels that that's normal. And obviously his constituents feel that that's normal. And telling black people that we don't want to give you our money. So, you know, that all of that is normal. You know, him and Jim's both. You know, it, like I said, it's like a Bunsen burner. The more you talk against African people, the higher you go in the ranks. And as soon as Romney started doing that, the higher he went up. And we all know that Mormons are bigots anyway. And I know there's black Mormons out there. So what? There's black neo-Nazis too. Go on the internet, you'll find them. You know, I mean, you know, there's Jewish neo-Nazis. I mean, there's Jewish fascists. I mean, that's who's in charge of Israel right now anyway. I mean, that's the whole Likud party. And before them, Shimon Peres and, you know, everybody who was hooked up with Lehi and the, what was it, the Stern Gang and, you know, the Haganah. These were the fascists. These are the fascists of the Jewish community. You know, I say this every episode because it needs to be said. The Zionist political persuasion is the far right of the Jewish political identity. In terms of cultural politics, they are the fascists. They are the far right. And I've said this before. You know, I'm not saying this to be fair, and I'm not saying this to try to dissuade it or dissuade anybody. Was that a word? You know, I mean, I'm being very serious. The Nation of Islam is a conservative organization. They are the far right. Now, do they extend their rhetoric as far as the Zionists do? You know, that's a matter of opinion, right? You know, I will say no. You know, is there stuff in there that I'm not particularly, you know, keen on? You're damn straight. And I have no problem telling. You know, I have members of my family that are in the Nation of Islam. But it is the conservative political spectrum of the African community, not the Republican Party. See, you know, Africans in the Republican Party are kiss-ass Uncle Toms that, you know, do not believe in themselves and feel that the only sense of worth that they can get is by being patted on the head or the back by a white man. They don't believe in themselves. They believe in white power. They believe in it. I'm not saying that they succumb to it or submit to it. I'm saying that they believe in it. It's simply not the same thing. The Nation of Islam is the far right. The Zionists are the far right. The Ba'ath Party of the Arab world are the fascists. These are the far right of the Arab political cultural spectrum as a community. And of course you have, you know, well, you have those groups and you have little sub things. I mean, they exist. They exist. But with the white man in the United States and in the UK, I mean, there's this numerous group. You can go on down the line. The Minutemen. The Ku Klux Klan.
which has nothing to do with the Philippine KKK. Totally, totally different. Right? The John Birch Society. The, you know, conservative citizens. The American Nazi Party. The American White Power Party. White Aryan Resistance. The Church of the Creator. You know, the Davidian group down there in Waco, Texas, that became famous, right? In your, in what's going on in the UK, you have the English Defence League, you have the British Movement, you have the National Front, if they still call themselves that. You have the British Nazi Party. You had the British White Power Party, right? You, on top of that, you have the Society for Britain is Israel Party, right? You know, I mean, you have all of these things. And, you know, as somebody pointed out recently, or recently to my knowledge, on the census forms that they have in Northern Ireland, they have, are you atheist Protestant or atheist Catholic? You know, and then you have the whole Aryan thing going on there, you know, which is strange when you have the loyalists, and so many of them are actually of immigrant, they're not full-blown Irish, you know, I mean, they're immigrants, and, you know, to Ireland, that have taken up the loyalist then, and they're some of the most vicious against the Catholics, and here they are, half Egyptian, or Greek, or what have you, immigrants to Ireland, which, you know, has, you know, Ireland is now considered the most crime-ridden country in the EU. It's also considered the most racist country in the EU, which, you know, considering the history of the Irish and dealing with the British, I find that to be pretty shocking. Stick around. This is The Angry Indian, and you are listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, coming to you from Red Man Studios.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. aboriginalpress.blogspot.com.
Former Washington, D.C. Congressional Delegate Walter Fauntroy's tale of French and Danish special forces rampaging through Libyan villages, killing and beheading both Gaddafi supporters and rebels alike is, well, there's no other word for it but bizarre. It jars the mind, not because there is any limit to the barbarity of which Europeans are capable, certainly not in Africa, but because of the manner in which Fauntroy himself has been behaving. The 78-year-old minister and former colleague of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who served for nearly 20 years as Washington's non-voting representative on Capitol Hill, traveled to Libya this summer on what he said was his own mission of peace. He spent lots of time in Libya with progressive journalists associated with former Georgia Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney's fact-finding mission in Tripoli. And he was reported by the Washington Post to have left a luxury hotel along with many corporate journalists on August 24th in a convoy arranged by the International Red Cross. When he arrived back home in Washington, Fauntroy claimed that he had gone underground for about a month in Libya after having witnessed the French and Danish special forces slaughtering Libyans in the streets of small villages, meaning he witnessed this in more than one village. Fauntroy told this story from his living room to Valencia Muhammad, who wrote it for the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper. He said, "The truth about all this will come out later. We have heard nothing more from Fauntroy since the piece appeared on September 7th. So what are we to make of Fauntroy's story? NATO's half-year bombing campaign in Libya has doubtless slaughtered thousands of civilians and soldiers. But blonde-haired NATO killers beheading Libyans on the ground and then telling the rebels that they will have to take the blame for it? That is a world-shaking story. So why didn't Fauntroy invite the national and international media to a press conference once he was back in Washington? Given Fauntroy's stature, the corporate media, especially the Washington Post, the nation's second most important newspaper, could not have avoided giving coverage. But Fauntroy's own failure to forcefully put forward his story beyond a living room interview with one person cannot help but diminish its credibility. It is also mind-boggling to imagine why the French and the Danes would need to commit on-the-ground atrocities of their own when they have at their disposal thousands of bloodthirsty jihadis who have no problem doing their own massacres. They don't need European Special Forces troops as role models for mass political murder. They assassinated their own military commander back in July. They have beheaded, lynched, and burned countless Libyans without the necessity of prodding from NATO. They laid siege to the black city of Tawerga, vowing to purge black skin and wipe the town from the face of the earth. Tawerga is now empty, its inhabitants slaughtered and dispersed, ethnically cleansed from the new Libya. And there are many more massacres to come as NATO aircraft blast a path for the rebels into the dark-skinned south of the country. These rebels are not people that require white men to teach them how to murder. They are quite capable killers on their own. So, Reverend Fauntroy, if you have a story, please tell it to the world in full. This is no time for teasing. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to www.blackagendareport.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, service in International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, January 3rd, 2012. While Palestinians and Israelis meet in Jordan in bid to revive peace talks, Israel is planning to expand its settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas warned against the failure of the recent attempts to renew peace talks. He said the success of the new talks depends on Israel's acceptance of the Palestinian terms to freeze all settlement activities and to recognize the two-state solution. If Israel fails to accommodate such terms by January 26, the Palestinian Authority will have to take some hard measures. By January 26, the 3 months set by the International Quartet Committee to revive peace talks will end. Abbas refrained from mentioning what the measures could be. However, he said the PA is not ready for that yet. The Palestinian president's statements came after the meeting that joined senior Palestinian and Israeli officials in the Jordanian capital, Amman, on Tuesday. On their part, a number of Palestinian political factions slammed the meeting, saying it will weaken the position of the Palestinian Authority and will serve Israel's policies. The Palestinian Authority has said repeatedly it will not hold meetings with Israeli officials until clear standards and goals are set for these meetings or talks. Meanwhile, Chief Palestinian Negotiator Dr. Sabi Arikat stated that the meeting does not mean resuming peace talks with Tel Aviv. Arikat added the Palestinian stance is clear regarding refusing to resume peace talks with Israel until it halts its violations and settlement activities. He also stated that the PA accepted an invitation from Jordan's King Abdullah II to meet with Israeli delegates and with representatives of the Quartet Committee. In other news, Israeli troops kidnapped a Palestinian young woman near Qalqilya Tuesday morning. Palestinian media sources said Maha Barham, 19, from the village of Kfar Kaddoum, east of Qalqilya, was detained and kidnapped at the northern entrance of Qalqilya. Eyewitnesses said the woman was seen handcuffed and put in an army vehicle and was taken to unknown destination. The sources said Barham was detained on her way back from Israeli jail where she was visiting her sister. Her family demanded the Palestinian Ministry of Prisoners Affairs and human rights organizations to intervene to know their daughter's whereabouts and to push for her immediate release. The Civic Coalition for Defending Palestinians' Rights in Jerusalem revealed Tuesday information from Israeli newspapers about Israeli plans to expand settlements in East Jerusalem. The coalition said in a statement published Tuesday that Israel is planning to build 117 settlement units in Har Homa settlement, illegally built on Abu Ghneim Hill, south of Jerusalem. In addition, Israeli authorities are planning to expand Har Adar settlement, built on lands that belong to villagers from Katanna and Biddo, northwest of Jerusalem, and 213 settlement units in five locations in the Ephrat settlement south of Bethlehem, in addition to a number of settlement units in Gevaat Hazait in the center of Jerusalem. That sums up our news for today. Thank you for joining us from occupied Bethlehem. You have been listening to Palestine Today from the International Middle East Media Center. For more updates, please visit our website at www.imenc.org. This report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and George Ishmael.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African-American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year or whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African-American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this the piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, it's What's for Demagogue.
This is Immortal Technique. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war in which tens of thousands of civilians were killed. We are told to look upon these deaths as an exaggeration or an acceptable loss in the war on terror. But this administration has lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, and produced phony news reports. People have been imprisoned without charges and tortured and illegal weapons used. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor for an investigation. Peace.
This is Intelligence Aboriginal Radio, Angry Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.